Welcome to the WinFL Show.
Welcome to the Outer Hebrides. This is the WinFL Show. I'm your host, Ian McKinnon, and we have a full house this week as I am joined by Mr. Dave Somerville.
Good evening, gents.
Good evening. Mr. Jake McGee.
Good evening, but we're not done.
We're not done. All the way from the Long Snapper podcast, we have Mr. Patrick Jackson, longtime friend of the WinFL Show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Glad to be back to defend the quality of my between shows homework.
Yes, so we're going to be talking about that later on. Obviously, as you guys know, we've been seeing some power rankings come out before a single ball has been done, practically before any training camps. Power rankings came out, and we saw them on Twix, and they were ridiculous. It was so bad that we decided to do something we've never done before, which is to have our own power rankings. We collated information. Each of us gave our own power ranking, and we also got Ewan McPhail to give us his power rankings, collated all the information together, and we have come up with, by far and away, the most accurate power rankings ever devised. These power rankings, absolutely definitive. You'll never need to look at another one before, in fact, during the entire season. That's how accurate they are. It's so accurate that we're just going to, if you reverse it, it's going to be the absolute 100% accurate picks in the 2025 NFL draft. That's how accurate these power rankings are. Does anyone disagree with me on that?
Lock it in straight away.
Might as well.
Might as well. Spoiler alert. Got good news for Carolina fans.
And the Chiefs are definitely three-peating. We've confirmed that. So the Chiefs are going to three-peat, and Carolina are going to have the first overall pick in 2025. Everything else in between, we will look at in our power rankings. But these are the only ones. So you can, anytime you see any others, just change the channel or, you know, scroll past it. It's not going to matter. These ones are definitive. Telling you right now. But before we do our power rankings, I've got a lot of stuff to discuss. We've got the International Series. They've announced the games for the International Series. There's been a couple of schedule leaks. Not sure how that happens, because that's absolutely not supposed to happen. But they've given out a couple of games. We'll talk about those. But before we do that, as always, Mr. Jake McGee, we're going to start it off with the news. What has been going on in and around the NFL this week?
Absolutely. It's been a busy all week in the NFL. And like you mentioned, the schedule leaks, it's very much like the free agency tampering. Like, oh, it doesn't happen. You know, the schedule's coming out this day, but yeah, we're getting drip fed. So obviously, I think that comes out like 1 a.m. our time tomorrow. So we'll cover that more next week. But there has been some news in terms of contracts and overdue contracts, in my opinion. Start off with somebody I spoke about quite a bit on last season's podcast, Antoine Winfield Jr. He's agreed terms on a 4-year $84.1 million deal, with $45 million of that guaranteed. That means of the 9 players that were tagged this year, only T. Higgins, who was the only one to request a trade, I think, has not received a new contract. So I think it pays him as the best safety. I think it might even pay him as the highest paid defensive back full stop per year at the moment. So well deserved, but very well paid as well.
Exceptionally well paid. Just before we talk about that contract, and I will put it over to you, Dave and Patrick, I think, Jake, because you said when they're doing the schedule announcement, you mentioned that, I'm pretty sure that Roger Goodell sat around the table with his cronies and says, right, guys, we're going to release the schedule. When do the WinFL Show record? And he's told they do it at about 7, between 7 and half past 7 GMT. And he was like, we'll go for 1 a.m. 1 a.m. the following day. Because always, now, we used to joke about this when we first started this podcast. And Patrick, you picked up on it as well, that the breaking news always happens as soon as we finish recording. It's every, and through the season, this will be the case. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean to say Roger Goodell isn't there to get you. I'm just saying. Just saying. Anyway, we shall move on. The Winfield contract. Patrick, I'll put it to you first. It's a monster contract, as Jake says. But, I mean, you can't argue he's one of the best performing defensive backs in the entire league over the past couple of seasons. Well worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't seen a lot of reward for that position in recent times either. So it's nice to see it getting valued at the level of input it gives to that defence. I think he's a vital cog in that machine. And it's been interesting seeing the Buccaneers really pull together and hold on to what they've got and add some pieces to it. There wasn't as much ins and outs as we maybe expected over the off-season from them. So good luck to them.
And Dave, we mentioned over the past few weeks that there's still a lot of defensive back free agents out there who have not been picked up by teams, loads of them. And yet, here comes Winfield, a monster contract. That might actually put some teams off from signing a veteran. We've already mentioned guys like Justin Simmons, obviously, still out there, not signed with anyone. Do you think this might actually scare people off because they're like, well, if he's getting this, Justin Simmons might be looking for similar money and we're not going to pay that for a free agent. What do you think?
It could go either way for these veterans that are available. You know, if someone thinks, yeah, he is one of the best available, I think one of the probably more favourable things that could happen for him is a kind of one or two year deal with a decent amount of money so that they, you know, Winfield's getting a 4-year deal. So maybe the best thing for these slightly older players is to get that 1 or 2 year deal, but still with similar money. But make no doubt, Winfield is one of the best in the league in a defensive back kind of market. But I say that he's one of the best. I don't think he is the best, but you know it's very good for him. I think it's actually going to be good for the league as well. Good for the players in those roles. In the long term, anyway, maybe in the short term, I think it's a wait and see scenario because obviously with you know other positions, for example, Daniel Jones that we keep mentioning or I keep mentioning probably, you know that did kind of reset the market. However, this one isn't completely resetting the market. It's maybe restructuring it a tad more than resetting, just to keep up. But with it, there's a slight increase in that kind of top. Top position or top paid player, so be interesting to see what happens. But I, at this stage, especially when you're going into the kind of early training camps, I'm not. Are you? Do you think there's a world where Simmons doesn't turn up for anyone week one?
I don't think so. I think he's too good a player not to. That would
be wild. Someone.
That would be.
It would be. It would be insane.
You're talking about a guy. Who is he's not an old player. He's like 30 years old. He's not an old guy. Yeah. So he's not lost a step. Top five at his position in the entire NFL. If he's not playing with a team, I don't think it's ever happened before in the history of the NFL, apart from the holdouts. Mm-hmm. Apart from, you know, an actual intentional holdout, I'm not playing until XYZ. I don't think so. I'm also going to push back on you just very quick. I'm going to push back on you. You said that you don't think Winfield's the best. Who would you put there on his level, if not actually better than him? Who would you reckon? Because I reckon Winfield, you gotta. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I would have safeties. I'd have Justin Simmons because I'm biased as the best safety in the NFL with Winfield right next to him. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of anyone better. Who would you say is a better? Who would you rather have as a safety? I should say.
Oh, that's putting me on the spot. I mean, I in my head last year anyway, I had Simmons as the best. Right, that was my personal opinion. But you know, you obviously got the two safety positions, so. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyle Hamilton, even though he drops into the kind of nickel quite often as well, he can play anywhere. Can Kyle Hamilton? Let's be honest, he can blitz, he can stop the rush. He's just a bit of everything. The ones that can, the safeties are really good at dropping back into coverage. I put Simmons there as my number one from last year anyway. Based on last year, Winfield right up there next to him, but I've got Simmons as number one, and yet he's a free agent.
And Jake, you've been banging the drum for Winfield over the past, not just last year, but I know, and playing for a rival, that he is definitely one of the best at his position. So just get your view on the contract. Do you reckon he's worth every penny?
I think you're worth exactly what somebody's going to pay you. And I think it's a long time coming. Should have paid him last year. Probably wouldn't have had to pay as much. And how many times have we seen it where you get in first and pay the guy maybe slightly more than the average? And then, you know, people in afterwards have to pay more. But they've certainly set the bar quite high. I would, in terms of safeties, Derwin James, if he can stay healthy, which is, always seems to be his problem, I would say Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, I love what kind of he brings to a team.
Great player, yeah.
But like you say, Antoine Winfield Jr. plays for a team I don't particularly like or enjoy watching, and I could see that they needed to pay him and that he was worth it. So that's about the highest praise I can give the man.
Now, Dave did mention...
Always remember the DBs who are picking off your quarterback the most. Like, I've got flashbacks of Kevin Beard and that sort of thing. We didn't mention Jesse Bates as well, who had a great season with the Falcons on a fairly ropey Falcons franchise. He must be up the top end of the consideration.
Yeah. Now, Dave did mention it's not essentially resetting the market, but tweaking it, I believe, is, it's sort of just tweaking it slightly.
Restructuring
it. Over in the quarterback,
that's a great term for it.
Over in the quarterback market, Jake, there was a big signing that's probably going to have Jerry Jones absolutely kicking himself now.
Jerry Jones will be kicking himself. Maybe Matthew Stafford will be kicking his legs a little bit, thinking he's next. But in that ominous trade where they talk about the two quarterbacks, I mentioned Matthew Stafford. Well, the one that got paid is the other one, Jared Goff. He got 4 years, $212 million extension with a Kirk Cousins $170 million guaranteed. Keeps Jared Goff in Detroit for the very much foreseeable. They've awarded $444 million in contract extensions this offseason to three players. Three great players. You've got Benny Sewell, we've mentioned, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and now their quarterback, Jared Goff.
Two great players. and Jared Goff as well.
Good to see, Steve. Right, so here's the thing. So, Cowboy fans, all off-season, haven't seen, we need to sign Dak to an extension. And they've not done it. And they've not done it. And they've not done it. And now this happens, and Dak Prescott's going to be going, oh, yes. Oh, thank you so much. And you know who else is going to be thanking their lucky stars? Jordan Love over in Green Bay. Because his will be coming up, and this has just, it's thrown it up. It's like you, Dave, I'm not going to say it's reset the market, but it's definitely restructured it. Oh, my word. That's a huge contract for Goff. And it's not that
mentioned. I was going to say, I mentioned Stafford because it's been kind of noted that Stafford, although turning up to voluntary workouts and, you know, putting on the good face, it's been kind of rumored that he's looking for a new contract or kind of an extension and more guaranteed money. So, the Rams traded for Stafford over Goff. So he's now got ammunition to say, well, you traded for me over this guy. So surely you value me more than this guy.
Yeah. You'd have to think
there's,
so.
Because there's no competition.
It was Stafford for Goff and first-round pick. Two first-round picks, beg your pardon. That was the trade. Stafford for Goff and two first-round picks. So they obviously valued Stafford way over Jared Goff. Jared Goff is a former first overall pick. So with the Lions paying him this much money, Stafford would be like, yeah, double it. I want $500 million fully guaranteed. Come on, what are you doing? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Patrick, let's get your thoughts on this. this contract. I think Goff, after he left the Rams, and Dave, I know you'll agree with me that, I mean, he had bust written all over him. He did. He had. 100%. He looked great early on, and then it just, as soon as they gave him the extension, everything collapsed, and they were like, "We need to get rid of this guy." Shipped him off. He had such a resurgence in Detroit, and now they've paid him handsomely for it. Let's get your view on this, Patrick.
It startled me, the amount, because if you're getting paid to that extent, you need to be capable of elevating your entire offense to make up for the cap hit that they can't spend on the other portions of the offense. And I worry that Goff isn't quite that. He's more sort of mid-tier in his quarterback capabilities, and that means you need to be accepting a wage at that level to allow the rest of the roster to compensate for that. Like, if he was performing consistently at a Pat Mahomes raising everyone around him sort of level, I would understand it a lot more than what we've seen from him. Now, maybe it's just this is the progression of quarterback rankings that we'll see, and when you've got the next few sets of contracts re-established, he'll be back down at like QB12 salary per year, where he sort of feels like he should be ranking. But right now, it feels like a bit of an eye-watering overpay and something that they won't be able to compensate for with the rest of the roster.
I just can't imagine a team overpaying a quarterback extension pre-season. That doesn't make any sense to me, I'm afraid. Dave, obviously, you know, I'll put it back to you here, because you know all about the whole scenario with Goff and Stafford. Mm. And I know you personally, with your own bias, don't think Goff's worth it. I know that. But he did play well last year. Played really well last year. And the Lions were so much better. And I'm not saying it's because they had Goff and not Stafford. Not saying that. But he did play really well. He was very effective. His connection with Amon-Ra St. Brown was incredible. And the fact that he's got guys like Penny Sewell there definitely makes him look better. Because let's not forget, in his Super Bowl season with the Rams, he had a good offensive line. He had a good running game. So Dave, tell us your thoughts on this.
When he has, to me anyway, I think that's one of, if not the best offensive lines in the league that was there last year. I it's hard to argue against that at all. When he has that, to me, he becomes a top 10 quarterback. Right now, the season that the Rams got to the Super Bowl and lost to the Patriots, we had that offensive line. We had that level of offensive line. But, you know, when... I mean, when the very next year, when we were injury, I mean, you saw the statement. I think we went downhill very, very fast. Goff went downhill very, very fast. His mistakes were ridiculous. There had to be a change, whether it was even drafting a quarterback high, trading up. We had nothing to trade, basically, because of, you know, previous trades that we'd made. Look, Goff is a good quarterback when he's got protection. When he's under pressure, that top 10 status disappears, like, quicker than Tyreek Hill down the field. That's how quick he goes down those kind of power rankings in terms of quarterback play. Is he worth that? In today's market, yeah, you can make a very good argument for it. What Jake was saying about Stafford, though, 100%. I'm fully on board with it. Give him another year on a contract. More guarantees this year, a few more guarantees next year, and maybe a potential out in that final year. Because, you know, he's not getting younger, but at the same time, there's also rumors that in a year or two, he might call it a day. I don't want the same Aaron Donald situation where our cap hit is still going to be huge for a player that's not playing. You know, we can't just cut that off. There's still going to be a cap hit whether he's retired or not. So it's got to be a little bit team friendly, but the man deserves it. But he's got to get paid more than Goff. That's just ridiculous that that's even a thing.
Jake, Has anything else been going on, or did you want to weigh in on this a little bit more?
I did want to weigh in, because Dave mentioned it. You know, it's not even a close competition between Stafford and Goff, right?
Correct.
Okay, so since the 2020 bonus random start count time.
Bonus random start. Patrick, get your keyboard ready.
Since the 2021 trade between these quarterbacks, I'll go through some comparisons between them. So wins, Goff has won. Oh, wins, I would like to go on record, is not a quarterback stat.
Absolutely.
But for the sake of my argument, Goff, 24 wins. Stafford, 24 wins. Completion percentage, Goff, 66%. Stafford, 66%. Turnovers, Goff, 41. Stafford, 41. You're starting to pick up a pattern here.
Are you sure you're reading two different players' stats here?
Yeah, two different players for two different franchises, but, you know, they're forever linked. Success rate, 46% for both of them. Pass touchdowns, Goff, 78. Stafford, 75. So 1-0 Goff. Sacks taken, Goff has taken one more sack. So if you want to take that victory, I guess we'll call it 1-1.
1-1.
1-1. First down percentage per attempt, 35.2% apiece. And to completion, 5.5 apiece. So for somebody who's worlds above, and it's not even a comparison how much better Stafford is, they are very, very, very similar in terms of the post-2021 trade. Obviously, the Lions have become, you know, a contender, and you'll see how highly we rate them in the power rankings. Mm-hmm. And the Rams have no complaints because they got a Super Bowl out of it. So it is certainly a win-win. But Jared Goff is far better than Dave will ever have you believe.
Wrong.
Come on, dude.
I mean, you can't argue with that. That is just, you know.
I saw this when Goff's contract was announced. Okay, now I thought, yeah, there's a lot of similarities in all those stats. However, then you go into the individual details.
Hang on, they're not similar. They're identical. Like one sack between them.
The glaring one. One Super Bowl, zero for the Lions.
But Super Bowls are not a quarterback stat.
Trent Dilfer has won a Super Bowl. No offense, Trent.
Jeff Hostetler. Don't know.
He's
got a Super Bowl ring. Mark Rippon. I love Mark Rippon, but
I genuinely don't think we could have won Super Bowl that year with Goff, a quarterback. Right? That is the main difference to me. We got someone who, under the pressure that Stafford was under, for example, with Goff in this situation, would have choked. Stafford didn't, and I promise you, I 100% believe Goff would have choked, and we would have not. We might not have even got to the Super Bowl.
Would have found a way, wouldn't you? when you got to the Super Bowl, Goff, you shouldn't have bloody been there.
It always comes back to that. And it's always going to come back to that, you know. So, yeah, my goodness. My goodness. Brad Johnson, he won a Super Bowl. Brad Johnson. Warren Moon hasn't got a ring. Dan Marino hasn't got one. Jim Kelly hasn't got one. Philip Rivers doesn't have one. But Brad Johnson's got one. Trent Dilfer, Doug Williams, Jeff Hostetler. What? Tom Brady, for goodness sakes, he's the worst of the lot. Super Bowls.
It's only a matter of time.
Super Bowls are not a quarterback stat.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking of one TB12.
I wasn't speaking about him.
Well, okay, the mention of him. Is he, I think he's preparing for a new role, a new movie role in Hollywood, because I think he's actually going to be the next Transformer with the amount of cosmetic surgery that man is having recently. Between, you know, I think he's probably getting a nose job.
So high up his forehead. He looks permanently in a state of shock. And I mean like a state of electric shock. It's just, he looks ridiculous.
He can't move any part of his face whatsoever. And, you know, if he was saying, what was it last year? You know, if they call, you know, I'll have a conversation. Mate, you won't be able to move. One hit to the face and you'll have like bits of plastic leaking out of your forehead. What are you on about? Just back you go. Get back into the retirement home.
Yeah, just love it. Love it. That's great.
Helmet from last year.
Any Tom Brady slander, love it.
Yeah, absolutely. But because it's true. They're the most overrated player in the history of all sports everywhere. Anyway.
I mean, my response to it when we were talking about it in the group chat was just that I'm reminded I am not ugly, I'm just poor. Because, you know, if you give me enough money, I think I could look in a permanent state of shock as well.
Yeah. Oh, dear. We should probably move on, Jake, because I'm sure other things have happened. I'm sure they have. Anything else happened?
There was one other contract, not quite to the scale of the two we've discussed, but the Buffalo Bills are given former Chiefs wide receiver Marquez Valdes-Scantling a one-year deal worth up to $4.5 million, including $1.125 million on signing bonus. So he's gone from Aaron Rodgers to Patrick Mahomes to Josh Allen. That's got to be one of the best kind of wide receiver dreams of his life. He's getting paid, he's winning Super Bowls, and he's always catching balls from Hall of Fame level quarterbacks. So a win for him, and much needed help for the Buffalo Bills. But yeah, not the kind of money we've been discussing just previously.
No, but I think the thing with Valdes-Scantling is we saw him, you know, with the Chiefs, and he wasn't great, but he made one huge catch in every game, and it seemed to be like a game winner or a game clincher. It's just like every game he's in, Mahomes going deep, and there's MVS 40 yards down the field to set up the winning field goal or something like that. It seemed to happen all the time. But he did have, again, suffered a lot of drops last year. So we'll see how he gets on. We'll see how he gets on. Best of luck to him. It's not a huge contract, as you say. Patrick, what do you make of the MVS signing for Buffalo?
He's about their seventh wide receiver addition to the offseason, if I've been keeping track correctly. Mm-hmm. So, all right, they lost their biggest two, arguably, so it makes sense they've thrown a lot of darts, and it'll be interesting to see which of those darts find the mark. You know full well that if he doesn't find the mark, he'll end up back in Kansas City and magically resurrect himself again. So kind of hope, for the sake of the rest of the league, he does all right there.
Do you think, like,
How about just a little bold prediction that maybe if he has a decent year this year, then he ends up in Jacksonville on a 3-year, $70 million contract or something.
And then Tennessee come in and offer $300 million.
Yeah, but only 5 years from now when they do that.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
It's a bold shout, given what we saw for Goff and given that we know that Lawrence's extension has got to come next season.
Well, yeah.
Good point.
That's the... Yeah, they'll be missing Calvin Ridley, though.
Ah, they won't be missing paying him. Good Lord. Sorry, Pat. Listen, I love Calvin Ridley, and he had a great year, but that contract he signed, wow, it's huge.
It may be not so sad that he'd gone, to be honest. More of like, yeah, I can see why they didn't stretch to that.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous contract. Right, are we done? No, Jake, sorry, I just keep saying are we done after everything you say. And
it's
been
a busy week.
It's been a really busy week. So, was there more, any more signings, or shall we talk about the schedule?
There was no signings. I'll just quickly jump in that the Hard Knocks is ever increasing. We've got, obviously, the kind of training camp Hard Knocks, which is the original one. We now have an in-season Hard Knocks that they're, if I remember rightly, maybe going to toy around doing a whole division, which will be interesting. And now we're getting a Hard Knocks off-season with the New York Giants, which is starting on July the 2nd. I don't know what we're really going to be witnessing, because obviously you don't really get too much access to off-season.
Carnage.
Carnage. The Giants, that's what
it's
going to
be. For the Giants, they should change the name to Tough Watch. That's going to be difficult, man. That's going to be really difficult to watch that. Yeah. Sorry, Giants fans. I'm sorry.
No, but you're not.
I am. You know, I've got nothing
We're
against
all
Giants
looking
fans.
Forward to seeing Dable strangling Daniel Jones in the background of shots.
That's a good point, actually. Oh, my word. Yeah, so that's a hard knocks for the Giants, yeah.
Yeah, hard knocks for the Giants, and that kind of leads us nicely onto the international series. Like I say, the full schedule is going to be out basically tomorrow for us. We know a few of the games, but what we do know for definite is the international games.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants are one of the games. in maybe the standout highlight game of the international series, where the New York Giants travel to Munich to play at the Carolina Panthers. I don't want to say this maybe. In NFL terms, I'm not sure what Germany did to deserve that.
We are not going to go there. Just, absolutely not. But tough luck.
We're sending you Sheffield United versus Luton and you would like it.
It's. I mean, New York. Hey, maybe it'll be a really good game. Maybe it'll be a great game. And it'll be like 35-34 or something like that. We don't know. We don't know what it's going to be. We saw the Chiefs Dolphins, and that was an absolute snooze fest. Chiefs raced out to 21-0 lead by halftime, and then that was it. That was all your scoring, defense all the way. A total snooze fest. Now, back to they were looking forward to 60 points in that game, and it didn't happen. So maybe this will be the opposite for them.
That's a very positive outlook, dear. So I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
So that is the last international game, actually. It's on the 10th of November. The first one is in Brazil. We knew it was the Eagles, and it had been widely spread that it was going to be the Packers as the away team. That is on the 6th of September. So Packers-Eagles, that is a very, very good game. Brazil are getting treated very nice. And I think we see when they're foraying into a new market, they give them a great game. And then maybe Brazil next year are going to have, you know, Tulane against, you know, Mississippi State as their NFL game. And they're just going to try and convince them that is an NFL game. So we'll see what happens to them next year. But that's a good game for them. I don't know if anybody wants to speak about that before we go on to the United Kingdom games the London games.
Just very quickly, I saw something, and I don't know if this is true. This could be just something that was spread around the internet. I don't know if it's true or not. But I saw a thing that Sao Paulo, the football stadium, that is it true that opposing teams, when they come there, aren't allowed to wear green because of the... It's something to do with the team that are playing. They don't allow anyone wearing green stadium. So if you've got the Packers and the Eagles, what are they going to wear? Like, seriously, you've got the two greenest looking teams in the entire NFL coming to Sao Paulo, which has basically banned the color green from ever entering the stadium. I'm going to be really interesting to see what goes on there. I'm just saying. This could all be nonsense, but I did read that somewhere. So I don't know if it's true. It could be rubbish. I don't know.
You could have mistaken Sao Paulo for Glasgow, or parts of Glasgow anyway with that.
Eagles played the Packers at Ibrox? That would not go down well. Just saying.
No. No, they wouldn't. No, that's banned. Nope. I don't approve of this.
So the...
I imagine it's like one of the biggest teams in Brazil is Palmeiras. So shall we say in South America, in soccer terms, the fans can be a bit
impassioned, I think is the word you're looking for.
Probably not a word I was going to use, but yes, that's a safe word. Yes,
they take an interest in their football.
Yeah, we'll go with your version. That's much safer than what I was going to do. But I think it probably is, but surely they would have some exception for the NFL and also probably armed security guards, surely. that would probably help.
Yeah, they will do. They will do. It's just something I read, and I was like, that's kind of weird. That's the case. Yeah. That they chose those teams. Anyway, Jake, so the other international games, of course, are the London games. Talk to us about those.
Yeah, we've got the London games, and it's good that we've got Patrick with us, because his team is the figurehead of the London games. The other game that doesn't involve the Jaguars is another green team. The New York Jets visit Spurs' ground, or Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, to play against the Vikings. And then, just like last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars are doing back-to-back weeks in London. First, they technically play away against the Bears at Spurs' stadium. And then the week after, they have a home game at Wembley where the Patriots visit them.
Yeah. I like the idea. I'm hoping to go to one of the games. I'm actually liking the idea of the Bears game because I've never been to the Spurs' new stadium. Every game I've been to has been at Wembley. But Patrick, it's your Jags. So we'll get you to talk about the international series. And are you hoping to go to any of the games yourself?
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, the queue is always a lottery, but there's often tickets floating around afterwards with various people that you know. So some of them usually filter my way if I'm lucky. And yes, last season I went to the Jags-Bills game. It was my first trip to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And I would say I enjoyed it more than my trips to Wembley. Not just because of the win, because I also saw them beat the Ravens at Wembley, but just the general match day experience was more pleasant than the Wembley experience was. So, yeah, it's the good one to choose of those two, I think, although I think tickets will be pretty competitive given the number of legacy Bears fans in the UK and the excitement over the Caleb Williams factor. But, yeah, games worked for them last season, and it's interesting this time that they flipped the home and away. So the first game is the Jaguars away in air quotes game, and the second game is the Jaguars home in air quotes game, because it felt like they almost got a home advantage from having spent the extra week in London when playing the Bills, when it was technically a Bills away game. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see that flipped on its head and the more sensible way around this time. And it did surprise me how different the game day atmosphere was from going to Jags technically home games versus a Jags away game when it was all very Bills-focused, Bills-centric. I wasn't expecting it to be quite that big of a gear change because I guess most of my sports watching is soccer, football. So you don't get that big of a difference when you go to an away game. You just happen to be segregated at the one end, but the match day experience is pretty similar. Not so for NFL.
Dave, over to you. The international games, are you going to try and get down to one?
Not this year. The plan is for next year. I've got a little trip planned away this year with my daughter, so I'll get that instead of the NFL this year. However, next year, London, watch out. Dave is going to be there. Whether the Rams are playing or not, I'll find something or bribe someone to give me their tickets if I can't get them myself. So, next year is my plan, but this year, London is safe.
And did you have any views on the games that are happening this year?
Nah.
No, there we go. Nope. There we are.
Put it this way, Jacksonville are doing amazing stuff for their international outreach, and their plan or their intention has really been reached with their international games, because I think, you know, with them being the home team so much, I really think their marketing has been brilliant on the international stage. Their fans back in actual Jacksonville, I don't know if they're all that happy about it, because they're obviously losing at least one game a year, maybe even, well, I mean, two.
It's a very prickly subject.
It is, yeah. I mean, you're kind of, it's like in Glasgow, if someone asks you, who do you support? You don't give your answer. That's the safest thing. Do you support? Right, well, no one says that, because both sides are going to punch you in the face. But
I've been to Partick Thistle games. That's all I'm going to say on that matter.
Was it community service?
Shocking.
Well, no, I mean, it is just, you know, it's one of those issues where there's no right answer, but there's a lot of wrong answers. So, they've got their strategy. Not all the fans agree with it, but they're doing wonders for their kind of wider reputation, particularly abroad. So fair play.
See, Jake, I'm going
to... If it was two home games, it'd be horrible for the Jags fans. But one home, one away, I think makes logistical sense. Can't get my words out. They always had this hanging over their head of they want to relocate the team for good, which really rankled with them because it was just this clickbait journalist headline that came up again and again and again. With the new massive stadium announcement in Jacksonville and the funding agreement with the local politicians and all that sort of stuff, that threat feels like it's been lifted. If they're investing like $1.2 billion in a stadium in the local area, it's not like they're going to relocate the team anytime soon. So Jags fans have been enjoying dunking on all of the journalists who've been saying, they'll be going to London. They obviously kept receipts on their bit of threads from 5 or 6 years ago, judging by my timelines this last couple of days. So, yeah, the pressure, I think, has eased, and the friction between the UK-based Jags fans and the Jacksonville-based Jags fans, which is all to the good.
It is. Speaking of which, I saw that during the draft, they had the International Fan of the Year guy with the Jags.
Yeah, Stevie did it. Good old Stevie.
Yeah. And I was like, that's a lot of effort to go to dress up like your team. That's a lot of effort. He had full face painting going on. And I don't mean like your standard at a fundy girl, I'm a tiger. This is full blown, you know, like, I mean, it was impressive. What did you think of that?
So there's two things here, right? So there was the Irish Jaguars fan who announced the pick, who we're all on board with, because he's a guy who's been a Jags fan for ages and tweets about the team and gets involved in stuff. The guy in the full mask dress get-up malarkey first appeared as a Jags fan last London Games, has previously been Seahawks and before that Broncos, I think. And he basically has a sports memorabilia business and does a big dress-up thing to get some publicity for his sports memorabilia business, as far as I can see. And he saw the Jags as a bandwagon for that, which, as you might expect, got a little bit of backlash.
He's not a Jags fan, like an actual Jaguars fan.
I mean, he claims he is now, but he's jumped ship so many times in the past, I don't expect it to last very long. The announcement of the Fan of the Year thing for him was a shoot yourself in the foot own goal, given the reaction he got from actual Jags fans and the Jags online community, who all kind of know one another and know a fraud when they see it.
Oh dear to me, that's not good. But it's not... right, so... it's no offence, Patrick, but it's not glory hunting, is it? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get bandwagon fans who are like, Swifties aren't bandwagon fans. Swifties like Taylor Swift. That's
Swifties have started attending Chiefs games and are all big Chiefs fans.
That's because Taylor Swift
said
they're Taylor Swift fans. They want to be where she is.
So they're jumping on the bandwagon. Oh, the Chiefs are amazing. Kelsey's amazing.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one. The reason we're disagreeing with you...
See when Kelsey gets traded.
Just hypothetically, Travis Kelsey gets traded to the Jaguars, right? Hypothetically, okay? The Taylor Swift fans are going to go to those games. They don't care about the Kansas City Chiefs. They don't care about Travis Kelsey. They care about Taylor Swift. They will go where she goes. That's not bandwagoning. That's
It took them about 3 games to figure out what Holden was. What do you mean bandwagoning?
They didn't know who Travis Kelsey was. I got no idea. Anyway, sorry. Jake, over to you, pal.
Over to me in which way? Are we happy with the intent?
Sorry, I don't know if you said if you were going to go to a game this year or not. I apologize. Did I ask you that already?
You have not. I'm going to attempt, most likely going to attempt to go see the Jaguars and the Bears. Obviously got a bit of a soft spot for the Jaguars with Patrick. And, you know, they've been the kind of London's team. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned before on the podcast, some of my family members support the Bears. Mm-hmm. And, they, you know, I've got a bit of a soft spot for them. So it'd be a win-win for me. But I'm fully aware that of the London games, that is probably going to be the most popular. And the last couple of years, it's been an absolute bloodbath for tickets. So I'm not holding out hope. We'll wait and see. But if I was going to go to one, be the Jaguars and the Bears, and the Spurs stadium is superb.
Yeah, so you've been there, haven't you? You said that.
Yes,
already.
I've been to all of the London kind of stadiums, been to Wembley, even went to Twickenham. And last time I went to Spurs, and I would say it's definitely the better, or the best of those. I mean, you can't beat Wembley because of, you know, Wembley Way, and it's kind of historic, like, oh, it's Wembley. But that's the word I was looking for, iconic. But the Spurs new stadium, I found it a better experience.
There you go. Well, I hope to make it. That's the game I hope to go to as well. If we do manage to get there, hey, might see you down in London. Check that out. Right. Shall we move on, gentlemen? Shall we move on? Because there was a couple... Oh, sorry, Dave, on you go.
I was just going to say that one little bit of breaking news rumours, that the Rams and the Saints will play week 13, allegedly.
Thursday Night Football.
Thursday Night Football
at the Superdome. Oh no, I'm thinking of the other game I've seen leaked is the Broncos and the Saints, because it's Sean Payton back at the
Superdome. It's gonna be a lot.
NFL show derbies all over the place.
It's gonna be blood
and revenge games. Well, that's not really a revenge game, is it? He'd left the Saints and then signed to the Broncos. It's not like the Broncos poached him.
It was alleged. It's been alleged that the Rams and the Lions are going to be on week one.
Oh my word!
So that's we're talking revenge games. Yeah.
What's your revenge for?
I remember for 16 weeks he was like, "Lions are my team. I love the Lions. Yeah, Lions are great." And then after playing the Lions, he was like, "I hope the Lions burn." Basically, it was like, you know how for 2 years he's been like, the Ravens are a good organization, to now being like, I hate the Ravens, and I always have.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
No. It was about halfway through last year that the Ravens became an enemy of the state, right?
Thanks for making my point, Dave.
Unbelievable.
Halfway through, I mean, 18 months of, they're a world-round organization, and then... They play dirty. They go and score.
They didn't play dirty because the ref missed a call using they played dirty.
Well, that was the story of the entire last season. I mean,
can we just throw it forward to when the Ravens beat the 49ers next year and he's like, I love the Ravens?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
I mean, they're a good team now. My
favorite lesson to even.
Now that I'm over it, they're a good team.
Over it. You are not over it. My goodness. Wow. Just wow. That's all I'm going to say. Now, guys, we've got some power rankings to go through.
We do.
So, let's do it. These are, as I have already inclinated, these are the most accurate power rankings that anyone will ever see or hear this year. We'll redo them for next year, okay? But for 2024, this is it. Set it in stone. At number 32 in our power rankings, the Carolina Panthers. It was a consensus. It was the only one that we all agreed on. Carolina Panthers, therefore, will be picking first overall in the draft next year. At number 31, we have the New York Giants. At number 30, we have the New England Patriots. At number 29, the Denver Broncos. Can't believe you did my guys dirty like that. 28, Washington Commanders. 27, 26, and 25 are all tied points-wise. So we've just gone alphabetically. So we've got the Tennessee Titans, Minnesota Vikings, and at 25 the New Orleans. It's not alphabetical, actually, is it? N comes after them. Doesn't matter. New Orleans Saints at 25.
Whoa! We won one. What a 25. Start.
Yeah, see? You even cheated alphabetical order to get to 25. So there you are. At 24, the Arizona Cardinals. 23, Las Vegas Raiders. At 22, the Los Angeles Chargers. 21, Atlanta Falcons. At number 20, the Chicago Bears. So that's it. We're now into the top 20 there. At 19, Indianapolis Colts. 18, Seattle Seahawks. 17, New York Jets. 16, the Cleveland Browns. 15, Pittsburgh Steelers. At 14, all the way up to 14, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. At 13, the Jacksonville Jaguars. My word. Woo! At number 12, the Dallas Cowboys. At number 11, the Los Angeles Rams.
Too high.
We're now into the top 10. We're into the top 10, and we start with at number 10 with the Miami Dolphins. Number 9 is the Green Bay Packers. Number 8, the Philadelphia Eagles. Number 7, Cincinnati Bengals. Number 6, the Buffalo Bills. Number 5, the Houston Texans, all the way at number 5.
Woo-hoo.
My word. Number 4, Ewan McPhail's Detroit Lions. At number 3, the Baltimore Ravens. Which means this year's Super Bowl is going to be played between number 2, the San Francisco 49ers, and won by number 1, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Again.
Chiefs are going to three-peat. Called it now. Put your bets down. It's going to happen. They're going to beat the 49ers in a back-to-back Super Bowl matchups. It's basically just set in stone. That's what's going to happen. What do we think of this? Dave, put it over to you. What do you reckon? Power rankings.
I was very broadly similar on a lot of them. A couple teams maybe slightly too high, in my opinion. I'd probably put them a little bit too high, not reading it back in my own. I think Steelers maybe a little too high. What are they? Maybe 14, I think I remember saying.
15.
I think Seahawks. Yeah, 15, mm-hmm. Sorry. I think Seahawks just won below the Jets. I think the Jets are a better team. Well, with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, I think the Jets are a better team than the Seahawks.
These power rankings are all things being equal. Yeah. Everybody's healthy. Because I know when I was looking at it, there was a few people questioning where the Cincinnati Bengals were. Quite high up. But this is assuming Joe Burrow was healthy all year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they went, what did he play, 9 games last year? 5-4, I think, in those 9 games. But those losses were like games they should have won. They should have won like 8 of those 9 games that he played in, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it works sometimes. So I get where you're coming from with some of the rankings, the way they look.
Yeah, I mean, the only other one, it's not because Patrick's on the podcast. I'm just saying the Jaguars are far too high in this list. They are, 13 maybe on this list?
They're 13.
That's far too high. I don't know what they're doing up there. And the only other one I would question is we've got Arizona above the Saints. And possibly even the Titans as well. I'm not convinced about that.
Oh, I'd have them over the Titans.
Really? Because you had
the... I was going to say, I think I had the Cardinals a bit too high there as well. But the Chargers
The only reason the Cardinals are where they are is because you had them so high. Everyone else had them lower down.
What about the Chargers? Where were they?
The Chargers were 2 spots above Arizona. They're between Las Vegas and Atlanta. Atlanta are just above.
Wow, I'd take the Raiders over the Chargers. Maybe
you would, but this is scientific evidence we've got here.
Is that what it is? Okay, right.
We got 5 random people to make up power rankings within
random
people. Gave them 3 minutes to do so, And then we added all the points together, and this is what we came up with. This is as scientific as it gets.
I'll take your word for it. But I mean, we all agreed on what the top 5, 6 maybe. I think it was.
We didn't.
Did we not?
A certain somebody booked the code.
Of course, the Jag, yeah.
Yes. Somebody had the 49ers at number one and the Chiefs at number two. That was Mr. Patrick Jackson.
Number three.
And the Lions at number three. This was Mr. Patrick Jackson.
Of course it was.
I mean, the thing is about power rankings is it's not about who's going to win the Super Bowl. It's about who's the best on average over the season.
Yes,
right? And I'd argue that on average over the season, the Niners were better than the Chiefs. They fell short to them in the one game that mattered, but on the average of the regular season, they were a more impressive side. So that was why I had them that way around, and I think they've maintained better in the off-season than the Chiefs have as well. So
the way I look at the power rankings,
we'll see which way it goes.
The way I look at it is I match the teams together.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got Kansas City beating San Francisco, they go above them. That's the way I look at it. I think San Francisco would have beaten Baltimore, so I put Baltimore below San Francisco. I think Baltimore would have beaten Detroit, so they go below Baltimore. That's the way... That's just how I do it. I don't know how anyone else does it. It's clearly not the way Patrick does it. Clearly not. What's going on here, Patrick? Jake, give me your views on the power rankings.
Chuck me in a hat and pick them out.
my views are the Jaguars were only as low as 13 because Dave had them at 22. Which was criminal. Absolutely criminal. I was the only one to have Atlanta ahead of Tampa Bay, so I'm going to be keeping a close eye on the NFC South anyway, so we'll see how that kind of turns out. I felt bad in hindsight that I was so low on the Cardinals. I even had them below the Giants, which is criminal. But I thought it was really interesting. Say, for the most part, we were somewhat similar, but it's nice to see kind of differences, except for Dallas, who were 13th, 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 14th, and 14th. we were very agreement that Dallas are like not quite in the top third anymore. They're just like, yeah, they're there or thereabouts. We'll give them a pass.
And that's a perfect example of these power rankings because Dallas may well win the NFC East again. They may well go 13-4 this year. But they're not going to win the Super Bowl. They're not even going to make the NFC Championship game. We know this. We know this is going to happen. So there's no way they're going in the top 5, 6. It's not. Bump them back down. Bump them down. That's what I do with Dallas. Still can't believe you guys did my Broncos so dirty.
Broncos
did the Broncos so dirty. We just reflected that.
28th. So, come on.
Yeah, everybody else. 30th for Patrick. 29, 29, 29 for you and Jake and Dave. And you also had them so high at number 27. We did them so dirty, guys.
27. I got 30th. You had them 30th. You think there are only two teams in the NFL worse than the Denver Broncos? Two? Are you crazy?
Oh, 29th. Oh, so actually, we were all 28th. I forgot my first line of the spreadsheet is our name. The teams lower were Carolina, New England, and New York Giants. I had Arizona low. Dave had Tennessee lower. You had Atlanta lower than the Denver Broncos.
I'll tell you my reason for this.
Oh, my.
Because I was talking to you and McPhail about this, about my power rankings, and I explained my reason for Atlanta being so low. And the reason is, I don't think that Kirk Cousins is going to be Kirk Cousins for the Atlanta Falcons this year. Now, you may say, what makes you think that? Well, I'm going to tell you. That's a good question. And here it comes. Here's the answer. Why would the Falcons draft Penix 8th overall if Kirk Cousins was going to be Kirk Cousins this year? They've seen something in training or in his rehab from his injury that they're like, not convinced Kirk's, even though we've given this huge extension, this is going to work out the way we want it to work out. It's the only possible explanation for drafting Penix 8th overall. There's no other explanation for it. None. There isn't one. That's the only explanation.
You've got to stop putting me in positions where I have to defend the NFC South teams that I don't like. Because
go for it, Jake.
Atlanta probably don't have a first-round pick next year because of tampering with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles. He's no young boy. I don't think there's, we can judge the pick, but quarterback is the most important role. If Penix sits for 2 years and then plays, the Falcons will be quite happy with that. We've seen the Packers do that. We've seen other teams do that.
I know, but not when the guy's already 26 years old.
He's 24. The Falcons almost won the division last year with Desmond Ridder, who I will go on record saying never plays another snap in the NFL. They almost won the division with Desmond Ridder at quarterback. That's how bad the NFC South is. Yeah, the NFC South has, again, very easy strength of schedule. The Falcons will easily win 8, 9, 10 games with me at quarterback. You know, Desmond Ridder got them to, what, 8 games? I mean, you're telling me Kirk Cousins is not worth 2 games over Desmond Ridder? You think the Broncos are going to win 8?
I think the Broncos might win 8 games next year. This year. I'm saying next year. I hope to win more than next year. This year, I think they might. Patrick, what have you got for us?
I mean, question for you as much as anything. So you said that the Falcons drafting a QB is inexplicable unless something's wrong with Kirk Cousins.
Yes.
Why in that case did you pick JJ McCarthy for them in the WinFL show mock draft?
Because McCarthy was there. And McCarthy's much younger. That's a guy you can sit for 2 or 3 years. And on most people's draft boards, he was much higher than Penix. A lot of people didn't even have Penix in their top 6. Or, sorry, Adam, 6th. Like the worst of those 6. A lot of people did. Most people didn't have him in the first round at all. So it was very surprising that he went. I did have JJ McCarthy in my mock draft, and only because I was like, well, why you got one of the top prospects? Because he was one of the top prospects in the draft, still there at number 8. Boom, take him. He can sit for 2-3 years behind Kirk Cousins. You sit Penix for 3 years, he'll be 27 years old. Right, no offense, Penix, but, you know, that's not young. I'm just saying. What are you saying, Jake?
27 is young.
It's young for us. It's not young for a rookie quarterback, you know, to all intents and purposes, making his first ever NFL start. I mean, it's younger than, who was the guy the Browns drafted at 28 years old? What was his name again?
Brandon Whedon.
It's younger than Brandon Whedon. So there is that. That goes against my argument. Literally, the only thing that goes against my argument is Brandon. They go, not really, no. But you have to see my point here. I just think if they thought that they were getting the Minnesota Kirk Cousins of 2 years ago, no way they would have taken a quarterback. None. They would have been like, absolutely not. Because we're going to have Cousins for 2, 3, 4 years. Top of his game, let's get him another weapon, or let's get him an offensive lineman, let's get him the tight end whose name I've completely forgotten already. Brandon Bowers. Why would you not order one of the top cornerbacks? Brock Bowers, beg your pardon.
Yeah, him too.
So you look at that, that's what they should have done, and that's what they would have done if they thought they were going to have Kirk Cousins for the next 2-3 years at top of his game. And I think they're thinking, he's not at the top of his game. He might not even last the season. Draft quarterback. Called it.
Mm-hmm.
Called it right now. We'll see how wrong I am. Could be very wrong.
It's stupid early prediction strike.
Stupid early predictions. Bit late to put the soundbite in, but I'll put it in here.
And now it's time for stupid early predictions.
There you go. See? So, anyway, Patrick, views on the power rankings. What do you make of it? Come on.
I mean, I've reached back to my stats degree and think, like, collective crowd wisdom for people who know a bit about a subject should get you closer to the the actual average, especially in that kind of middle things where everything's a bit murky. I feel like I'm higher on the Lions and the Rams than the average, and I don't like that, but I feel like that's the way it's trending from their respective off-season and roster buildings. I'm lower on the Jets because I'm not convinced about Rodgers' comeback, and I'm generally more reticent than average on the people taking rookie quarterbacks, having seen how long that's taken to bed in various places throughout the league recently, although there's other reasons for that in Jacksonville and just what the quarterback's like. The trickiest one I found was the Dolphins, because they were red hot at the start of last season. Then they disappeared due to injury. And then you look at how they've recruited in the off-season, and they don't seem to have learned from that at all. They've just got a load of high-tempo, high-injury possibility athletes. And like that could fall apart in exactly the same way this year. So eighth around like week eight seems absolutely plausible, but that could plummet to missing the playoffs again if they have the same sort of problems they had last year. But yeah. It was interesting to see how it broke down among all the different folks, and you kind of focus on your own division, which biases things a little bit.
It does. I tried not to be biased, but of course I am. You can't help it. It's sort of in there, unconscious bias. There you go.
Okay.
It's the confidence about knowing those rosters that bit better and knowing their tendencies a bit better, like. And sometimes that makes you more confident about wins, like when I predicted us to go 14-3 last season. And sometimes it makes you more confident about mediocrity. So it can go both ways.
I also did suffer from bias because I believe I put the Chargers above the Raiders almost purely because of the quarterback position. Because I think our Raiders' defense is terrifying. But I just think unless, and I do like Gardner Minshew, but I just don't know if it's going to work out. I don't even know if he'll start the full season. Not sure what's happening there. And I liked with the Chargers then immediately filling their wide receiver roles, albeit with rookies. But, you know, the people that let go, they fill those up. And I think Herbert's just such a great quarterback. But looking back, I might actually pop the Raiders above the Chargers. In that one, because I think they've got the potential to be a very good team this year. It pains me to say that, but they do have that potential.
Yeah, the thing about the Chargers is Harbaugh has a very clear idea about what he wants and a clear picture of how he gets to it. And you look at some other teams, their roster building looks a lot more haphazard. So I've got more faith that the Chargers turn it around and build to something really competitive quicker than a lot of franchises. Sorry, Jake.
No, so this really, like this exercise that we did, and it was fun, really made me look forward to in a few weeks' time when we start discussing, you know, division by division, because you can see kind of how people view different divisions. Obviously, we're biased towards our own, but we will predict our division winners, and that it always kind of throws a spanner in the work. I remember the AFC South last year, and then this. Just judging off the power ranking so far, obviously things can change. Me and Patrick both had the Dolphins ahead of the Bills, whereas everybody else stuck with the Bills ahead of the Dolphins. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting more hands on the actual divisions. I think once you start focusing on specific, you know, four teams at a time rather than 32, you can really get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, and we've got to be...
And assuming full fitness, as Neosa said up front,
yeah,
the Dolphins have regressed a lot less than the Bills. Like, it's a big assumption that everyone's going to be back at peak performance, but the Bills lost a lot more pieces. They've gained a few as well, but it's a case of how well that fits together and how fast it hits the ground, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we will be doing a deep dives into each of the divisions because 8 weeks prior to the... Hall of Fame game. Is that what it's called? Hall of Fame game? Yeah, the first one of preseason there.
Yeah.
We'll be having 8 weeks leading up to that. We'll be deep diving every single division. And of course, over the next couple of weeks, we've got the schedule to talk about next week because Roger Goodell shafted us. Thanks. So we'll discuss the schedule next week because it's getting released tonight or 1 o'clock tomorrow morning, I should say. And it's basically just talking through training camps and obviously, you know, signings and cuts as they happen before we get into the deep dives the next couple of weeks. But gentlemen, do we have anything else to discuss before we move on to our final segment?
Do people have the will to discuss the Harrison Butker ordeal?
I'm going to, full disclosure, and that I know virtually nothing about it, so I will let you take the reins, and I will comment as I see fit.
Oh, okay, I'm not sure how up to date Patrick is with the matter, but me and Dave were discussing it earlier, so I thought I would bring up on the podcast, and I will try not to get myself or the Winterfell podcast cancelled. Mm-hmm. But Harrison Butker was delivering a commencement speech. Obviously, graduation time in colleges, they get people to come in, famous people or professional speakers to come in to say a few words about, you know. Normally it's relevant to the class and inspirational. Well, Harrison Butker took his opportunity, ironically talked a lot about knowing and staying in your lane, and then went on a 20 plus minute tirade about anti-abortion, not a big fan of the LGBTQ plus community. He mentioned addressing women, and it was a hard word for him to say, women, that he was proud of what they've achieved at this point, but they have been told diabolical lies, such as promotions and titles, when really they're obviously more excited about marriage and kids, because that is, you know, being a homemaker, there is no better thing for a woman to be in the world, according to Harrison Butker. And there was other things such about, in the world that we live in at the moment, there's nothing more heartbreaking than Harrison Butker. Not war, not genocide, not poverty, not famine. There's nothing more heartbreaking than hearing about people moving in with their partner before marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That really, really breaks his heart. And, you know, thoughts and prayers out to Harrison.
I'm guessing, and this is purely a guess, that Harrison Butker did not grow up with any big sisters. Because they would have kicked lumps out of him for saying that.
Most interesting thing about all of this, about him talking about women being, you know, they should be aiming to basically be wife and baby makers, is that his mum is an accomplished physicist. So it's really strange to say that you know, women should be aiming to, you know, stay at home, and you'd kind of stereotypically think he must come from that kind of family, but his mum is quite well accomplished, so she didn't do that by just being a married woman and popping out kids. So, and he quoted Taylor Swift, yes. Which I think, given the conversation he's surrounding and the conversation that Taylor Swift surrounds, was a very bold move, and going back into the locker room with Travis Kelce being like, hey, did you like my speech where I quoted your girlfriend when I was talking about anti-abortion and all things she doesn't really agree with? I thought that was quite a bold move, to be fair.
Sometimes it's better to just not say anything at all. And I think Harrison Butker should maybe have said, maybe this is one of those times where I should maybe just say, hey, well done, everyone who's graduating. Good for you. Go Chiefs. There you are. End of discussion. That should have been it. Dave, what do you reckon?
Well, I've got two of my, and I'm using this term very loosely, my favorite quotes, just to back up everything that Jake was saying. He was talking about how, about the direction that the college was. I think the college was Benedictus College. So it was, you know, it's a very staunchly Catholic college. In America, I think it's in Kansas, if I'm, or Missouri, where it is. It's around there. But they were talking about the direction that the college was going in, about, you know, having pride in the direction the college is going in. Before then, out of nowhere, just going, not the deadly sins sort of pride that has an entire month dedicated to it. So that was shall we say, not what he should have brought up. But there was also the other one as well that Jake was referring to. For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should be proud of all you have achieved to this point in your lives. And before he went on, he talked about his own wife. But what they should now do is embrace the most important titles of them all, homemaker. Now, considering, and me and Jake spoke about this, considering that the last, what, 3, 4, 5, well, minimum 4 years in America for their degrees and things, that's probably not what you want to hear when you've, you know, worked your heart out for all these accomplishments. Just be told by a guy that walks out on a field 3-4 times a year, gets paid millions of dollars to do it as well, just to kick a ball as far as he can. Please don't. That's not to be something to be telling us. And just to back up what Jake was saying, his mother has a degree in chemistry and a master's in medical physics. So, yeah, and apparently now he was up there collecting his honorary doctorate of humane letters. So, the irony is not lost on me there. I was quite disappointed in Hasenbucker, but I was also disappointed in the people that were there, because when he said the term, embrace the most important titles of them all, homemaker, there was rapturous applause around the place. So I wasn't exactly overly impressed by that. Some people have, you know, everyone is entitled to their beliefs, right? That we all agree with that. However, the way you word them and the kind of it's borderline targeted hate speech at that point, as Jake said to me before, it's kind of hidden in the free speech argument as well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to hear your guys' thoughts on that as well. But let's put Harrison Butker in the same sort of glass box that we put many of our well-liked NFL players in the league, such as, you know, Deshaun Watson and people like that. But
keep in mind, that'll be Dr. Butker to you now, because he just got an honorary doctor, didn't he? So it'll be Dr. Butka. Patrick.
That sounds like a bad fizzy drink, doesn't it?
Dr. Butka.
Straight out the 9p bargain basement of Aldi. Yeah, that's exactly what it's coming.
Do you think they'll re-resurrect what's the worst that could happen and just play that speech? Yeah.
Yeah. It's disappointing.
Yeah, it definitely struck me as it was hitting more of the sort of right-wing political buzz phrases than it was, from what I understand, about like Catholic religious doctrine buzz phrases. Several aspects of it strayed away from what I understand to be mainstream Christian views, but the sort of person that he is, rich, white, strongly religious, means he's very confident of telling you that his one narrow way of viewing how you should live your life is the correct one, regardless of the broad spectrum of views in that regard, even within just the Catholic faith. So it's a sad indictment of the way that portion of the world is going, and certainly a position where you're like, I would have liked you more as a player if I didn't know any of your personal views on anything. And we've seen quite a lot of that this summer. I could do without it, to be honest.
Players should just play. Just play. Don't talk about things.
That was the funniest part when he's talking about leaders and people should, you know, stick in their lane and know their lane. A lot of people coming out in his defense.
You're a teacher. You know.
A lot of people come out in his defense and like, oh, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech does not mean freedom of consequences, and also it means you're also allowed to freely not agree with that person. I just thought it was bizarre to me saying how people should only talk about certain things and do certain things when, as Patrick mentioned, he's a kicker who's been invited to do a speech and decided to take that chance to kind of tell people what they should be doing with their life.
It's a sidestep from, I don't know, Bono telling me that I should give money to children in Africa. Do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, just You're a singer. Sing. Stop preaching. If you want to help starving children in Africa, you give them the $500 million you made on your Facebook shares. How about that? There you go. It's going to do a much bigger difference than me filling up my wee ski-aff box every year. Okay? So just go ahead and do that.
Jeff Bezos telling you to support local businesses.
Actually, right. Jeff Bezos. Oh, is this
a new sponsorship announcement?
I wish. Yeah. I saw a thing with Jeff Bezos is like planning on giving like $100 billion to cancer research or something like that. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'd need to find the story. And then he's got this sort of thing that he's drafting up just now to give away a ton of cash. So, I mean, well, the amount that his ex-wife didn't get half of, you know.
He's going to have round one, pick one of the drafting, who gets my money. There we go. He can do it in NFL style at the same time.
Yeah. So if this does come to fruition, then, you know, a lot more respect for Mr. Bezos. That's all I can say. Because at the moment, I don't really have an awful lot.
When he was going through his divorce, his wife, now ex-wife, was like, I'm going to donate tons of, you know, the money I get to charity. So this is maybe him being like, I can do it too. I am also a good person.
Maybe that's what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be. It's like, do you remember the thing with, and we're going way off topic here, and I apologize. I apologize. Standard. But do you remember the thing with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard? Right? Oh. I'm sure you do. Yeah?
Yeah.
And do you remember that she was going to donate the money to a charity, and I forget what it was, and then she says, oh yeah, I pledged that money. And they're like, well, you didn't give the money. Of course, I pledged it. And like, do you understand that pledging money and giving money are two completely different things? And it was like millions of dollars or a million. I forget what it was, the actual figure. But it's like saying you're going to do it and doing it are two different things. So maybe Jeff Bezos is just saying he's going to do this. I don't know. I am not putting him in the same realm as Amber Heard of villains in society, right? Justice for Johnny Depp, that's all I'm saying. There we go. Let's go on that one. Right.
Then the NFL goes political.
See, should have stayed in our lane. We should have listened to Harrison Butker.
Harrison Butker, you are right. I apologize.
He was absolutely right. I should have stayed in my lane. Wow.
About that one thing, Harrison.
Yeah, exactly. But we take pride in our lanes. There we go.
Right, we should probably move swiftly on before we actually do get cancelled. Jake, I think that's everything we've covered. So Dave, Patrick, do you have anything to add before we move on to our final segment? Taking it as a no.
Yeah.
So gentlemen, let's move on to our final segment, which is, of course, as always,
Random stats.
Courtesy of Tim Durbin. Random stats. Dave, why don't you go first with random stat this week?
All right, guys. So I had to double check to make sure we hadn't done this one before, because it's one that we should be aware of. This is one game back in 1979. And this was a game between the Houston Oilers and the San Diego Chargers. Now, one player stood out in that entire game on defense. And it was a player by the name of Vernon Perry. Now, has anyone ever heard of Vernon Perry? Neosa?
I'm going to be honest, the name's not ringing a bell.
I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised, because apart from this kind of one-off season, he was a complete unknown, but it's definitely his most notable achievement in the entire league. So in this game, he had 4 interceptions, 8 tackles, and 1 blocked field goal. Now, in any game, that's huge, but this was in the playoffs in 1979. So basically, he blocked a field goal and returned it for 57 yards. before being tackled just before the line. He had four interceptions that were thrown by the Chargers quarterback, Dan Fouts. I want to say his name is.
I believe it's Fouts.
Fouts, Dan Fouts.
Well, that's how they pronounce it.
Yeah, but something else to note about Vernon Perry is that he had no Pro Bowls, no All-Pros. The previous 4 years, he was actually in the Canadian Football League with the Montreal Alouettes. I think is how you pronounce them. He did have a year before that with the Chicago Bears, but he spent 4 years in Houston with the Oilers before ending his career with the New Orleans Saints. And he had three fumble recoveries, but also he carried on some form into the next game, which was in the AFC Championship against the Pittsburgh Steelers and Terry Bradshaw. Of course, they went on to win the Super Bowl that year in 1979. But he actually intercepted a pass from Terry Bradshaw in that AFC Championship game and returned 75 yards for a touchdown on Pittsburgh's first possession of the game in the AFC Championship. But apart from those two games, he did very little else in the league. But, you know, big shout out to Vernon Perry. It's one of these kind of little known stats, but I felt like I should have heard of him or I should have known about it from this game. But, 1979, playoff game against San Diego Chargers. Can I also point out that in that game, the Houston Oilers star players at the time, they were all injured. So they had to have a big game on defense, and Vernon Perry stepped up. Four interceptions, eight tackles, and he blocked a field goal as well and returned at 57 yards after it. So big shout out to Vernon Perry there for what is undoubtedly, it's one of these kind of just, you've got the random guy coming in, you know, the backup, two big, huge games for the team, and he turns up. So well done, Vernon Perry, for that.
Nice. Very nice. I like it when you get like it is literally a random stat. Some random guy had a great game, one hit wonder. Fantastic. Jake McGee, would you like to give us a random stat?
I will indeed. And I was focusing on divisions, and I mentioned earlier I'm looking forward to breaking into divisions. I think the first one we'll be talking about is the AFC East. So I thought I'll start there with my random stats. And I was looking at division champions since the merger, which was 1970. Obviously, the Patriots are way out in front after their domination of the last kind of two decades. I think they've won 21. Next up is the Miami Dolphins. They have won 14. And then the Buffalo Bills have won 11. And now you're thinking, well, there's four teams in the division. So obviously the New York Jets, sadly, with only two, are fourth. But I've got bad news. You're not fourth. The Baltimore Colts won it in 1970, 75, 76, and 77. So they had four before they ceased to exist. And even worse news, you're not even solely in fifth. Because the Indianapolis Colts won it in 1987 and 1999. So in a four-team division, the New York Jets are joint fifth for titles.
That's not good.
Not great. And the 1998 and 2002 for the New York Jets. So
technically, they're sixth because the Colts had two before they did. The Indianapolis Colts.
Correct. So, yes, the Jets are in sixth place in a four-team division. They are the Spurs of the NFL.
Oh, my word. That's absolutely wonderful. I love it, Jake. I'll tell you what, why don't I go next, and Patrick, you can finish us off. How does that sound, pal?
Perfect, mate.
All right. So, my random stat concerns three-peat. Now, we know that the Kansas City Chiefs have won the last two Super Bowls and they're looking to become the first team to three-peat. Okay? It's never been done before. We know that. But that's not actually the type of three-peat I'm talking about. Because we're going to be talking about quarterbacks. And specifically, and Jake's going to love this, quarterbacks who pass for more than 5,000 yards in a season. Now, we know, we know that only, I believe it's only 9 players have ever done this. It's happened 14 times and Drew Brees is 5 of them, right? But what Drew Brees did, I'm going to put out a very bold prediction. I'm not convinced this record will be broken in the next 25 years. I'm going to say it now. Within the next 25 years, this will never happen again. Because in 2011, quarterback Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints passed for 5,476 yards, then an all-time record. I still kind of count that as an all-time record because Peyton Manning passing it by 1 yard was rather suspect. It looked like no gain on that play. 2012, it did. It looked like no gain. So I'd actually tie them at 5,476. In 2012, he threw for 5,177 yards. And in 2013, he threw for 5,162 yards. He's the only quarterback ever to have back-to-back 5,000-yard seasons, and he did it 3 times in a row. He had the three-peat. I don't think that's going to happen within the next 25 years, by which point I'll be a really old guy, might even be dead, so you guys can fact-check that one for me 25 years from now. Mark it down, okay? Because I'm a bit older than you guys are. That is my random stat. Drew Brees, the only guy ever to three-peat 2011, 2012, 2013, with back-to-back-to-back 5,000-yard passing seasons. And Drew Brees never, and I'm with Jake on this, never gets enough love for being one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever played this game that we all love so much.
And how many MVPs did he win?
Zero.
Zero?
None. Not one.
Matt Ryan won one. Cam Newton won one.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Tom Brady probably won.
Tom Brady had like 3 or 4.
Yeah, but when he was in the NFC South. I was relating it to the NFC South. It felt like every quarterback in the NFC South won an MVP except the best one.
Oh, yeah. And it's not even close that Drew Brees is the greatest quarterback the NFC South has ever seen. There'll never be a question. And it's just, it's criminal that he doesn't go. When people talk about who's the best quarterback of all time, you hear the same names over and over again, and Drew Brees never gets mentioned, and he really should. And he's just one of the most underrated quarterbacks of all time, which sounds ridiculous. Surefire Hall of Famer when he retired, leading all time in passing yards and touchdowns and everything, and just never even got an MVP. Ridiculous. Yeah, there you go. Patrick, would you like to finish us off with your random stat?
Gladly. This is similar trend to that one, I guess, in that it's slightly predictive and slightly pessimistic. Following on from the slightly predictive one we had a couple of weeks ago, just pre-draft. Jacksonville Jaguars have 2 winnable-looking games in London this year, as we discussed earlier on the show. Bears with a brand-new quarterback could be a threat, could not. Depends how long that takes to bed in. And the Patriots looking like they're probably going to be worse than the Bears based on the consensus rankings we talked through earlier. So I'm hoping the Jags go 2-0 in London like they did last year. Last year, they won 3 games in Jacksonville. So they almost won as many games in London as they won in Jacksonville. And this year's home opponents, Texans, Colts and Titans, obviously, as the 3 divisional rivals, Jets, Packers, Vikings and Browns, and then the Patriots in London. So that doesn't kind of count. But I think there's a realistic scenario here where the Jaguars win more games in London than they do in Jacksonville next season. And surely that's got to be a first of the AFL, a team winning more games outside of their own city than in a city that isn't their own city in a single season.
That's bonkers.
I sincerely hope that doesn't happen. I hope you will. I hope you do. Well, you definitely will beat the Patriots. Hard to call the Bears game. I think it will be a very good game. But surely, I mean, you play the Titans twice. That's too, well, once at home, I suppose. Oof. Now you got me thinking, Patrick. Should I be worried for you?
Having gone back to look at the schedule, I'm relatively confident that they'll get one over on either the Vikings or the Jets. And they can't afford it to be more than one for the prediction to come true. So I hope it doesn't, and I don't think it will, but it's a realistic possibility. And that will really upset Jaguars fans.
Yeah, it would. It would. That's, yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. My goodness. I think the last thing Jaguars fans need is to be angry about something else. You don't need it. You don't need it. You guys have had, I've gone through quite a bit of pain. Quite a bit. You know, it's not been easy for you being a Jaguars fan. I'm sure of that. And I wish you guys all the best for the 2024 season. Maybe you'll go undefeated at home. That could happen.
I mean, fingers crossed. I'm going to be predicting with the opposite level of optimism than last season and hoping that it goes in the opposite direction to what I suggested it would.
Maybe. We'll see what happens. Anyway, gentlemen, I think that's us. I think we're done for the day. I beg your pardon. Dave Somerville, what have you got for us?
Just a little bit of breaking news that Netflix has announced a documentary series that will tell the definitive story of Jerry Jones and his unique journey in transforming the Dallas Cowboys franchise into America's team, which will, for some reason, be a 10-episode series. I don't know how you're going to get 10 episodes out of that, but right. Yeah, there's some news.
First point, they were America's team in the 70s.
There you go.
That's what they were called America's team because they were so popular in the 1970s. Secondly, 10 hours of Jerry Jones. I can't handle that.
I mean, so, but let's be honest. Some of Netflix's documentary episodes are an hour and a half, so it could even be longer.
Oy. Listen, I really enjoyed the quarterback thing last year with Mahomes and Cousins and Mariota. I enjoyed that. But Jerry Jones, does this mean they'll have Michael Irvin doing
the voiceover,
voiceovers or something like that? And he's just, the man's bonkers. He's absolutely nuts.
He's just lost his job, Neo.
Well, you know,
leave the man alone. He needs a Netflix pay. Okay,
come on. I don't think he's short of cash. You know, he just completed how many years on NFL Network? I mean, see, 10, 12 years he's been doing that. I don't know exactly how long it is. But, yeah, he's made some good money. Oh, Michael Irvin, I'm sure they pay quite well.
I'm sure Netflix have paid Jerry Jones.
If the executives at NFL Network are looking for someone to replace Michael Irvin, I can recommend myself. I'll happily go on and shoot the breeze with Mooch and Rich Eisen and Kurt Warner. Is he still doing it? Kurt's still doing it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd love to do it so much that you're not quite sure who's still there by this point.
Big fan. First time listener, long time caller.
Just saying.
I think we nominate Ewan. I think I would love to see Ewan on a panel because he would just suffocate himself, I think, because someone would ask him a question, he'd be like, why are you asking me? I could really envision Ewan McPhail having to give his predictions on a panel. That would be fantastic.
Oh, just imagine the
bold. He wasn't even come on the podcast, so can you imagine him on a desk?
No, I can't imagine on live television internationally. Oh, that would be good. Anyway, gentlemen, time is a ticking. I've thoroughly enjoyed the podcast. Thank you very much. Next week we'll be doing a full schedule, talking about the various marquee matchups that are coming up. Primetime games. Obviously, there'll be games subject to flex later on in the season. We know that. I like the fact that the NFL have done that so that, you know, as you get later into the season, they're going, actually, do you know what? When it turns out that the 1-12 Buccaneers are facing against the 0-13, I don't know, Packers, I don't know, I'm just making this up. Then maybe this shouldn't be a Sunday night game. Just saying. So I like the fact that they flex those games out. Of course, the problem is that the Broncos are so bad last year. They were so bad last year that they flexed out the Kansas City game. That's how bad the Broncos were to watch. That they flexed out a Kansas City Chiefs game. Where the Chiefs are fighting for a playoff spot.
I know we're actually... I know we're finishing up. I did want to ask you something that I forgot to ask you. Jason Kelce is joining, I believe, ESPN with RG3 making way for him. Is that correct? I'm sure I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, I read that today, yeah.
Yeah. I'm... Look, you know, I know he's got a big appeal.
But I know, but RG3 was
good. RG3 was good. Very good. Yeah. So that's
a bit like the thing with the ditching... The tight end.
Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
Greg Olsen.
Tom Brady.
That's going to be garbage.
That is going to be garbage. The man's got no personality.
He wouldn't be able to speak with all that filler in his cheeks.
We've come full circle.
We'll come right back to it again.
I'm sorry.
Greg Olsen was great. Why would they replace him? I know why they're doing it. It's because they go, money, we'll get some money. Yeah, until, 6 weeks in, everyone's like, do you know what? He's actually really bad at this. So, just wait and see. Anyway, gentlemen, that'll do us. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening in at home. Don't forget, you can find myself, you can find Dave, you can find Jake, you can find Patrick on Twix. You can find us at the WinFL Show. All that remains is for me to say, Dave Somerville, thank you for stopping by.
Thank you very much. I promise no more interruptions.
for
this week.
He already interrupted me. I was about to say...
Did it last 2 seconds?
Not even 2 seconds. Good grief. Jake McGee, thank you for stopping by.
Anytime.
Patrick Jackson, always lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
It's been an absolute pleasure as ever. Thank you for letting me defend my nonsense.
You didn't defend it very well, I'm just saying. And thank you, David. Thank you to everyone at home. We'll catch you on next week's edition of the WinFL Show.